There is a place where fears and fantasies get weighed on substance alone. Legends and lores are examined in fresh light. Conspiracy theory meets conspiracy fact. Abandon your defenses. Embrace the possibilities. Step beyond the threshold into other realms.
I'm laying there ready to fall asleep and I felt a pulse.
They can choose whatever they want with
about 3 feet tall.
Change to UFO activity.
And it remembers everything that ever happened.
And then there was one point where I heard a growl.
Some UFOs when we were there.
I want to know the truth.
You're listening to Beyond the Thresholds into Other Realms on TheEdgeOnAir.com and UFO-info.com. We have a great show for you today. It's the Witness Account Show. We're going to talk about some of our best cases, and we're going to have the witnesses themselves call in and explain to us exactly what they saw. Whether it's a UFO witness, Bigfoot witness, ghost witness, we're going to have them all in today's show. We also have Frank Frischino. He's going to be calling in to talk to us about the Flatwoods Monster and his book, Shoot 'Em Down. So we hope you enjoy today's show. I'm Anthony Kay. With me is Sam Maranto and John Stevenson, and we'll be right back after this quick commercial break with Farlin Huff. You're listening to Beyond the Thresholds into Other Realms. Beyond the Thresholds and Other Realms on ThresholdRadio.com. We have Farlin Huff, one of Sam's good friends, right, Sam?
You betcha. He's been one of my buddies for a long time now. It's 2004 is when I met you. I think it was June?
Yeah, it was June.
June of 2004. And maybe you could give us a little insight on what happened for you to call my butt out to visit you guys, and at that time, Wilmington, Illinois.
Okay, well, my children were outside playing in the neighborhood, and one of them came back in the house and said, "Hey, we just saw something up in the sky." I said, "Okay, show me." So they led me to the end of the block, and they pointed across the street to a vacant lot, and they said that there was a disc-like object that was just hovering above the ground at basically treetop level. There were no houses in that area. It was a large cornfield. And they said that they watched it for a little bit, and as soon as the oldest child said, "Go get Dad," they said it wobbled a little bit, and then it just lifted up into the air and disappeared. And they described it as metallic-looking, dark, and they said instead of reflecting sunlight, it seemed to be absorbing sunlight. And so I just thought, this is too incredible to not report it. So I discovered there was an organization called MUFON, and that's how I called you, Sam.
That was great, because we came out there, got to know you, and the children gave an excellent report. Your son actually took a quarter, and he says it was, the motion of it was like this, and he held it at end, and he hit it with his finger, and it was spinning, and he was watching it spin and wobble, and he says that was the motion that we saw. And we got to be friends, and sooner or later, he even told us about another sighting by one of your other sons, and maybe you could touch on that a little bit.
Right, that was right around the... It may have been the exact same evening as the big sighting they had down in Illinois, was it east of St. Louis in three different counties. But, I came home, and my son was just wild-eyed, and he actually had his camping machete in his hand, and I said, "Hey, let me have that, and what's going on?" And he told me that he was in his north bedroom, and he could tell that there were lights outside, and he thought he was going to see a police car or a fire truck. So he looked out, couldn't see anything out, you know, past the backyard or on the next street. And then, by the way, it was reflecting, he realized it was at the front of the house. So he goes out the front door, looks out on the street, and there's nothing. And when he looks up, at treetop level, there were three triangles violently drifting from east to west at treetop level. And it just really shook him up. And when he told me this, I'm like, oh boy, my son's got problems. Because I just didn't know that this stuff was really going on. So I was really relieved. I think it was the very next day when I heard on the radio that there were sightings in three separate counties by three separate county deputies. And I was like, well, good. I'm so glad to hear that.
Do you think they were drawn to your son?
Do what?
Do you think that the UFOs were drawn to your children or your son, or
coincidence? I have to wonder what's going on, because of that. There's three different children in my family that have seen a UFO, and it was on two separate occasions.
Interesting. Yeah, here you have the one not far away, and the other one directly, you say, over the house, or nearly over the house.
It was just across the street in front of the house.
Amazing.
And another strange thing about that sighting is that my son had a girlfriend at the time, and she saw the UFOs on the other side of town. They went across the road in front of her car. I don't know how high they were, but she saw them as she was driving her car. And so it seems like in the whole town, only my son, who was at home, and his girlfriend on the other side of town saw this UFO sighting.
Did he give any indication as far as how big these things were?
He thought they were just around 25 feet long.
Hmm. And there were three of them.
Right. And they were giving off this light. I guess it was like a red, and I'm not sure if there was another color or not, but there was a light flashing that led him to think he was going to see an ambulance or a fire truck or something outside.
It almost seems like they're drawn to children a lot, I've noticed, because when I was a kid, that's when I saw a lot of strange things, and then as I got older, it became more apparent that, you know, I didn't see very much as I got older, but when I was a kid, I remember seeing things like UFOs and stuff like that, even ghosts.
Well, I really want to see one, and I'm not getting to see anything.
Oh, you've had your share of experiences as far as with Bigfoot. Now, before we venture into that, we got to be friends, and you became involved with helping assist on cases, and John's about ready to break the studio here. He's, I don't know who he's playing with, but anyways, as you recall, we had in 2004, soon after that, I believe it was November, we had that case from Wisconsin. And you took and drove up there to see Sean and Robin. And can you tell us what you personally experienced? Because Sean and Robin have been on the show every single episode so far, telling of their many weird experiences. But what was it that you yourself experienced when you went up there?
Okay, well, it was quite a drive. And so by the time I got there, I was getting tired. And I was pretty new to the whole field investigation routine, and so I just thought that the sooner that we settled in, the sooner something would start happening. But I spent the night with them, and they were very gracious hosts. And the next day, I'm out on the front deck or porch of their house, and I'm just looking at the trees and looking at the sky, and I noticed what looked like a pixelated area at the top of a tree that was across the road and down quite a ways. I would say, just from memory, maybe it's 300 yards or so away. It might have been farther. It's been a while since I was there. But anyway, I'm looking at this pixelated area at the top of the tree, and it just looks so bizarre. And I thought, well, if I look at that through my binoculars, you know, it'll go away. It's just probably some little optical illusion here. So I looked at it through my binoculars, and that just allowed me a really good look at it. It was a pixelated area, and it was at the top of the tree and to the right. it wasn't just actually at the tree top, and it wasn't perched in the tree. It was at the top and to the right of the tree, but just right there. And it just really shook me up. I didn't understand what I was looking at, and I wish I could do that over again, because now I've learned a lot, and I would really study that as much as I could. But I just decided to go back into the house and think about what might happen that night.
Now, and what would be the best description of that? If you were to say it reminded you of something, what would you say it reminded you of?
Well, people are going to say, "Oh, well, yeah, you just think of that," but it reminded me of the movie Predator when it pixelates, when the alien pixelates itself out for the camouflage mode. That's
what
it looked
like. Is that they thought they saw something that looked like the Predator up there, didn't they?
That's odd. You don't see pixelation in real life. That's something on the computer.
Now, when we had Sean and Robin come down from there, and they went to Rockford, and Dave Finkbeiner went and took them to the house, you met him. You were one of the people there with us, and we actually reviewed the footage and seen exactly what you had seen, because he has it on tape.
Right, and it was slowly moving through the trees, moving between the trees, just above the ground, and so...
So it actually had motion, too.
It was just incredible to realize that there's something real about all of that.
This place is just bizarre.
Yeah, they got some weird stuff going up on there.
I already told Sean that in springtime I'm going up there myself, too. I'm going to do some investigating.
Well, you know what's interesting is we all went to a place not far from my house. It's a hill, and we did some observation. I wanted to see if he was able to pinpoint and know the difference between aircraft and whatever up there, you know, and just make an observation also, because he swore that these UFOs were following him all the way to his uncle's house, as you recall, Farland, right?
Right.
So we went to the hill. We were up there. Now, I think it was Finkbeiner and Julie and I had seen these dark objects flying over the main road, and they were pretty interesting objects. And all three of us saw it. I don't know if you had a chance to see it, but you do recall us mentioning that, I think.
Yeah, I do recall, but I wasn't able to focus in on where you were looking. Mm-hmm.
And then we came back and heard more and reviewed more. The other thing we did is we broke out the black light, and can you tell them what you saw, or if you saw anything when we looked at Sean?
Oh, yeah. There was definitely a round circle, and I'm going to say BB-sized or larger, that was in his eye if he looked down so you could see above the iris. That's where I saw I guess you would call it an implant. Mm-hmm.
And he had him in both eyes. Same spot.
Right.
And that's what really blew my mind. And they glowed. They were just as obvious as could be. And very unusual looking. Now, when you were up there, besides that, first of all, let's touch on something else which is also an interest of yours. And what is that?
Oh, that would be an undiscovered primate referred to as Sasquatch or Bigfoot.
And how long have you had an interest in Sasquatch or Squatch hunting, Bigfoot hunting?
Since July of 2004.
What got you into it?
Oh, 2004 was a great year. I mean, the kids had their UFO sighting, and I got to meet Sam. That was in June. And the very next month, I was in Oklahoma convalescing after some knee surgery I'd had. I was staying at a hunting cabin by myself just to relax, and that evening at dark, something or some things came up to the cabin, and my whole experience with that was just bizarre and just literally scared the daylights out of me. But since that time, I've just become obsessed with the subject, and I've lost my fear. But what happened was I could hear some footsteps coming up toward the cabin. The cabin is isolated, and I had all the lights out. It's totally dark, and I could hear what is now described by other people that have these encounters as samurai chatter. It sounded like two samurais mumbling to each other in these deep voices. And then there was a loud tree knock, that's a wood-on-wood sound, and it just sounded like a tree had hit a tree two times. And at that point, I decided to get in the cabin, and I shut the door. I still left all the lights off, and I sat in a corner chair, and I could just hear them mumbling and milling around outside, and every time I would shift my weight inside the cabin in this recliner, they could hear me, and I could hear them. They would move around as if they were going to anticipate me coming out the door, but that was the last thing I was planning on doing. And the next morning, I went outside. I couldn't find any footprints because it's just all hard ground and rock, but I did hear a limb snap, and when I looked up in the tree line, something big and dark is running toward me in the tree line that parallels the road to this cabin, and it stopped probably 150 yards from me at the most, and it just did a snort that I would describe as a gorilla snort. I know deer snort, but this wasn't a deer snort, and I just don't think a deer would run toward me like that. And I just realized at that moment that a Sasquatch was in the woods looking at me, and I couldn't see it.
That's kind of creepy.
Now, you've been out there quite a few times thereafter, but when you were up there in up by Sean and Robin up there in Wisconsin, did you not also have some interesting experience that you may account to something?
Right, just for the fun of it, while I was on the deck at night, and it was just freezing cold, Sean had been doing some project there, and there was a couple little pieces of scrap lumber laying there, and I picked them up and I knocked them together to simulate a wood knock. And then when I did that, from the pine trees up on the hill from their house, I got a vocalization that's a Sasquatch vocalization that I've heard in Oklahoma. So I was just very pleased that there's Bigfoot there around their house, too.
Sean had told me that he hears wood knocking or logs knocking a lot there, too.
That's just a big paranormal area in general. I mean, everything unexplained. What we got? Bigfoot, UFOs.
Cryptids. UFOs. Yeah, it's nuts.
All sorts of crazy stuff going on up there.
Tim White Eagle was out there when he was helping us work on the case, and he definitely, he says, no, I heard Bigfoot out there. They were making noises and howls. He says, no, definitely they're out there. That's what he was saying. Now, since that, I recall you taking some pictures that I enhanced, and definitely had some remarkable images. Maybe you could tell us more about that.
Okay, well, after I had my encounter there at the cabin in July, I tried to tell the landowner and his wife that I believe they have a Bigfoot on their property, and they got a big chuckle out of that and told me that I needed to get my imagination back in check, and I left with my feelings hurt, to tell you the truth. But I'd only been back home a couple of weeks when the landowner's wife contacted me and said, well, we had something happen to us at the cabin, and while they were there, they were loading some feed corn off of the porch of the cabin into the truck, and there was a loud roar, screaming vocalization that came from the woods north of the cabin, and it made the hair stand up on this rancher's arms, the landowner's arms, and he's a bear hunter and an elk hunter and all this good stuff, so he had never heard this sound before. And then a softball-sized rock comes sailing over the cabin and lands with a thud in front of their pickup. So he decides it's time to leave, and when he gets in the truck won't start.
Great.
So he's having to mess around with the cables on that. Well, anyway, I asked if I could come back to the cabin, and they said, well, if you really want to, go ahead. So I put a game camera outside of the cabin, and it did capture an image of what looks to be a female adult Sasquatch, and in the lower right-hand corner of the photo is a juvenile Sasquatch's face looking right at the camera. And the camera has a fixed focus, And so these Bigfoot are way too close to the camera, but it's not an impossible photo to make out. It's actually an incredible photograph in my viewpoint.
Well, when I did the enhancement, you could see the shape of what would be a simian's head. And then you'd have, and you pointed it out too, this, you'd mentioned that this looks like the thumb and thumbnail holding the, there was a pail out there or something?
Well, it was actually resting on the armrest of this huge metal chair that was leaning up against the cabin at the time.
And clear enough, you could see these images in there. There's no doubt.
That's pretty creepy.
Oh, yeah.
What's interesting to me about the juvenile is that its ear is very chimp-like. You can just see its right ear, and it's just round and chimp-like. And I just think that somehow they go through some changes as they mature.
And this ain't an area where there would be chimps normally or monkeys. This is what Wisconsin?
United States.
No, this is actually down in Oklahoma.
Oklahoma.
But it is a location.
The Arbuckle Mountains.
The Arbuckle Mountains. And then if you go east of there to the Big Thicket, you're talking Sasquatch area. I mean, the Monster Boggy Creek was filmed down there in
the Kamishi Mountains in eastern Oklahoma. There are several Bigfoot sightings over
You say before, Farland, that you were in your, your camping lodge there, and there's a Bigfoot on top of your roof or something?
Some large.
Oh, right. Yeah. Well, I was in the hunting cabin one time. Something got up on the roof, and it was so heavy that the roof was creaking and popping, and this is actually a solid rock wall cabin. And the roof beams are made out of 4x8s and 6x12s, and so whatever was up there was really heavy. I was worried that the roof was going to give way.
Hmm. Imagine that, being in your cabin, roof caves in, and you got a Bigfoot in the room with you.
I was imagining that. I really was. I was like, man, I don't want this to happen.
I would try to kill it just to prove that there are Bigfoot, you know, just so you can have the body to prove to people.
Well, it's going
to
be a scared animal. If it's like any other animal, it's going to be, it might not be aggressive, but it's going to be in a room with you and probably scared to death.
I'm sure it's not like Harry and Henderson's, but, you know, it's...
Well, there's no way I could possibly harm one, not on purpose, and especially not to just prove that it exists. These things are, to me, they're like ancient people. I mean, they have a culture, they have a language, and I think they even do art, because Sam told me, as I was telling him about this encounter I had, he said, well, they'll leave you a gift. And I said, like what? He said, look for something like a turkey feather with a sprig of grass wrapped around it. And my jaw just dropped, because I had found that exact same thing out in front of the cabin. And I picked it up and looked at it, and I just couldn't figure out where the grass started and where it ended on this spiral that went around it. But I just decided that someone else had done that when they visited the cabin, because hunters come in and out of there. And I left it on the ground, and man, I've kicked my rear several times when I think about that.
Yeah, I would have never hurt one myself either. I can't hurt animals. I'm one of those... You know, unless it's for food and you need it.
My girlfriend's with that. She's pretty much a PETA girl, man. I mean, if I even like look at the dog mean, she'll be like, "Don't do that." You know what I mean? She's such an animal lover. So am I. I don't think I could ever hurt an animal either.
No.
I was just kidding around when I said that. But you know, it just does kind of boggle me how I have still not seen enough evidence out there on cryptids to, I don't know, just to steer me in that direction that there are some cryptids out there. I mean,
well,
I've seen UFOs.
Let's talk about dermal ridges on prints that have proven that have dermal ridges, and dermal ridges are, of course, what your fingerprints, and on a foot are just as unique between human beings as they are on animals. And there are multiple prints of Bigfoot or of large foot castings with definite distinguishable dermal ridges. So that's one thing. Now, scat, on the other hand, have you ever seen scat that may be attributed to them or no?
Yeah, I have found something that I thought was Sasquatch scat. But I don't have any way of sending that to anyone to get it analyzed.
Right.
But I like what you're talking about, the dermal ridges. Yeah, the flow patterns on the bottom of their feet flow in a different direction as the dermal ridges on our feet. And what's interesting to note, too, is that foot casts that were poured back in the 1960s have these dermal ridges on them. And no one noticed that until recently. And someone goes, hey, look at these. I think it was Jimmy Chilcutt, a forensic expert down in Texas. He pointed it out to the Bigfoot people.
Didn't he do work for the FBI?
I think he has done some work for them. He actually worked for the Conroe Sheriff's Department.
Yes.
And he's retired now. But yeah, there's lots of evidence. It's just not evidence that science will accept as definite proof. But that might change this spring because there's a person in Texas right now, Dr. Melba Ketchum, who's doing a DNA sequence from Sasquatch hairs.
That's cool.
And she's got the mitochondrial DNA sequence. So right now she's doing a peer-reviewed paper presentation, and she's making sure all of her ducks are in a row so that when she comes forward with this to the media, they're not going to be able to tear it apart. They're going to look, and all of her constituents or her fellow scientists will have signed off on it saying, yeah, she did it right.
Well, once they get that type of scientific proof to DNA, those skeptics can't deny that.
Well, when you have that much evidence, we don't need proof. We just need evidence to support the data, to support the theory, and the evidence is solid. There is enough hair sampling to retrieve the DNA, and so far, all the DNA testing that has ever
it was
been
inconclusive,
done,
wasn't it?
And studies have inconclusive. There's no matching animals.
Right.
There are none. So I'm
right.
happy she's doing this and doing everything proper. Again, there is a concern, and I think this is where part of the scientific community has an issue, that, say, for instance, we do stumble across this and cite it as being some sort of a humanid, a hominid, then what do we classify it? Is it more simian? Is it more human? And does it have rights? And which rights are those, of an animal, or do they have rights of a human?
Well, even animals have rights, is how I believe, too, though.
Absolutely. I mean. But, I mean, you know, it's going to be different. Now, we've recently discovered, I don't know if you've heard about this, but there's been a discovery of a tooth and I guess some other bones in Russia of a new species of man. And it's not, say for instance.
Is that the one that was way older than history had mankind?
Yeah, it's not Cro-Magnon.
It's
300,000 years old, and it's a new species altogether.
And it was actually humanoid man. I mean, one of
yeah,
the
it's,
more.
Yeah, it's man.
Not a monkey, an actual.
No,
yeah, I saw that too.
It kind of makes you wonder about a lot of our history, what's real and what's not.
Well, you know, the thing is, we only know a minuscule amount of information. The other thing is we weren't there to document it. And even if you are there, I mean, look at today. We were talking to our past guest, which was Richard Dolan, mentioning the fact that one half of all of our documents are considered secret because of national security concerns. Well, if you take that into consideration, then half of our history is missing. Therefore, how could you look at half of anything and get a full picture? So, getting back to the DNA sampling, I think this is going to be huge. And if it comes out, and the results of it, I think you're excited about that.
Oh, big time! And I believe that DNA sequences have been obtained in the past, but they come back so close to human that they always assume that the hair samples have been contaminated.
Yes.
But I believe the DNA is going to fall somewhere between Neanderthal and human. It's going to be very close to human.
There's so much thing. I mean, this, what's happening now, especially after the new year, I mean, as time goes on, more and more secrets are going to come out, and more things that were undiscovered in the past and we didn't know about are going to be coming out as discovered or new discoveries are coming every day as time goes on, and I think we really are heading into what Sam said it as before, an event horizon of, I mean, this, that's that is the perfect word for it, an event horizon. I mean, that's what we're at right now, I think, is a new era of information.
Yeah.
Right. Now, I would love to know the truth on everything, and I feel like some people are afraid of the truth. They're afraid they'll lose control of
certain
things.
Well, that's what it is.
But
it's national security.
Hey, Farland, what I was going to ask you before, when I was talking to you before that I'm not a hunter or anything, I was going to say, do you carry cameras with you or anything? Because I never go anywhere without a camera myself.
Well, it seems like I have my best encounters when I have nothing at all, and everybody goes, well, yeah, sure you do.
Well, yeah, that's how
but
it is, too.
I've taken tape recorders, I've taken cameras and game finders, and when you do that, it just seems like they realize that you are looking through something or you're holding something or you're pointing something, and it seems like they just kind of stay back and watch you then. But when you have absolutely nothing in your hands, it just seems like you get to hear more movement around you, more tree knocks, more vocalizations.
That's actually what I'm all about, just having the encounters now.
What
you do is you get a small little pocket camera. That's what I do. And I actually turn the flash off. And I'll carry that thing with me usually anytime I go anywhere. And it can't hurt, but that way it's not showing. You know, it's one of those things you pull it up and take a picture if you can. But turn your flash off for sure, because that'll give them a heart attack and possibly get you killed.
Yeah. Now,
I agree with you, but I just feel like when you've got something like that, your mannerisms are going to be different, because you're thinking about this camera you have, and there's just going to be something about you that they can pick up on, I believe. And so I have backed completely off of trying to get any photographs or anything at all, because there's so many people out there trying to do that now. You know, I hope they do it. I'm rooting for everybody.
I agree.
And when I go out into the woods, it's just for my own encounter. If they let me know that they're there, that is just such a reward for me. I feel like somehow I'm accepted to a point.
Yeah, that's true.
It's your personal journey is what it boils down to, not out to.
Well, the reason I want a photo actually is because other people say the only real way to do it is kill them. I don't want to kill it.
No.
I just want to try to get some photos of it to show it's there. I mean,
well, that's a Michael Shermer. You know, we got to have the body. Show me the body.
Yeah, I don't want to kill a creature.
Got to have the body. You know, like last time I looked, I haven't seen Jupiter laying under some sort of microscope. I mean, there are things outside the reach or the ability.
And what's the new UFO one I'm saying? Remember, it's not a real UFO unless you can get the ashtray.
You got to bring the ashtray back. There's one for you. Well, here you had experiences out there. I'd like to have you share some of the findings you had while you were in Illinois here in Wilmington. And first of all, do you feel that there are Sasquatch in the Illinois area?
Oh, I think Illinois has several areas where there's Sasquatch, and I think there's been sightings in every state except Hawaii. I think there's a reason for that. I mean, if it's a big hoax, why hasn't someone hoaxed a Bigfoot sighting in Hawaii? I just don't think there's any Bigfoot in Hawaii. And I think that anywhere that there's plenty of deer, because that is a main food source for them, and there's cover as far as the forest goes, and there's fresh water for that. If you've got those three things, then there's a possibility that there's Bigfoot there.
Now, when you were in Illinois, you were doing some experiments and some excursions. Did you feel you had any luck when you were doing that?
Oh, big time. And I would go into the woods and let it get dark, and then I would walk out in the dark. And there would be something walking beside me, and when I would stop, it would stop. When I would walk, it would walk. And I was doing things like that for a period of 5 years until it finally led up to a point where a research partner was with me in this little area. And in the complete darkness, we had something methodically moving through the woods at just a big, steady pace. And you could just hear all the vegetation and tree limbs moving out of its way. And it got behind us, and it's only 30 feet behind us. And we just keep sitting in our chairs, pretending like we don't hear it. And then suddenly, it just rushes out. There's all this romping and stomping and rustling, and it just comes right up to us. And all we can see is there's something big in front of us. It's not blocking the stars in the sky. It just comes right up to us, and I yelled a name that I had. I call it this name every time I come to this area, and it just stopped probably 10 feet or less right in front of us, and then it just went back to the tree line and kept walking away from us, and as it was walking away, you could hear it snapping tree limbs off, and we think that it was on all fours, and that it probably came out sideways and was romping up to us, and we don't know what it meant. I mean, if it had wanted us to leave, if it had wanted to kill us, it could have done anything. It could have made sure we never came back just by scaring us to death. But it didn't growl. It didn't do anything to us other than it came right up to us like that. So for all we know, that could have been a friendly, hey, here I am. We don't know what type of gesture that was.
Aren't they known for false charges? Isn't that one of the
things?
Yeah,
they do bluff charges, people have said, and so maybe that was a bluff charge, and we just didn't have enough sense to realize it, but again, we couldn't see the
thing. A bluff charge for me would be a real charge, because I'd be out of there.
I'd load my drawers, there's always about it.
Well, after it all happened, we probably stood there for about all of 1 minute, and we decided, well, maybe we need to pack up. We thought we stayed there 10 minutes, but I don't believe we did.
When
I started pulling our little chairs up.
Do you know Stan Courtney?
Farland? Yes.
I was actually in a forest preserve out our way out here with Stan, because I had told him some stuff, and I met him out here, and he says there's really good signs of Bigfoot activity right out here too, and he's even recorded a howl that he said was amazing.
Right.
Well, when you were down there in Oklahoma or up here, share some of the stories that you've heard from other people that you may have run into doing similar research.
Right. Well, I try to see if I can talk to people about this subject, and most of the time you can't. You just get laughed at, and that's okay, because I laughed at someone one time, and so I think back on that before I knew that Bigfoot was real. But there was a lady there in the town I was living in that said, oh, hey, yeah, I've got a story I can share with you. And her mother, 10 years prior to 2004, about 10 years prior, she was traveling to the next town in the next county, and she had to drive right by this little research area that I was checking out. And she saw a Bigfoot cross the road right in front of her vehicle. And so from that moment on, she would never travel that road by herself. If she needed to go to that town, she would make sure that someone rode with her. And then after she shared this story about her mother with me, I talked to her again later on, and she and her son were riding their bicycles on a bicycle path that's near this research area. I'm calling it a research area. It's just an area that I went to. But her son was riding his bike ahead of her, and he's just about 10 years old, maybe younger, and he's a little ways ahead of her, so he goes around a curve out of sight, and when she goes around the curve, she has to stop, because there he is, straddle his bicycle, and a Bigfoot had crossed the bicycle path in front of him, and it shook him up so bad that he just wanted to leave, and he never would go back and ride his bike there with her ever again.
Now that gets your attention.
Yeah.
I guess I saw one when I was a kid, which I wasn't aware of, and Stan told me it was one. And I was about 14 walking, I was in Mahaffey, Pennsylvania, walking right next to the creek, and there's heavy woods there, and I saw a black bear. Well, at that time, that's what I thought it was. But as I walked, it walked. I'd stop, and it stopped. But I was just a kid, and I was talking to Stan about that, and he's like, holy crap. He goes, bears don't do that. He goes, that was a Bigfoot.
Exactly. I think a lot of times people say that people that see Bigfoot probably saw a bear, but I think it's the other way around.
Yeah.
Yeah, 'cause I never thought of that. You know, looking back in retro and being older, that's true. A bear's not going to pace you and stop when you stop. A bear's going to come out and eat you or run away. That's only two things.
Right.
Now, on the getting back to UFOs, down in Oklahoma, you've had your share of some new events going down in and about the area, and maybe you could touch on some of those and give us some ideas of some of the strange things that have been happening in Oklahoma while you've been down there, and or heard about, I should say, also.
Okay, this past summer, I had my night vision binocular out, and I was scanning the tree lines, looking for any eye shine or anything, and so nothing was happening. Well, something did happen, but I don't want to lay too much information out. Everybody's like, man, this guy's so full of it. So anyhow,
well, that's all right. We'll listen.
Yeah, on this show, they won't think
no,
that.
No, they
worry.
Won't think it. Go ahead. Tell us.
Okay. Well, I eventually ended up turning the night vision up to this, toward the sky, and there was a star, what looked like a star, looked like all the rest of them, but this little star was on maneuvers. That thing was zigzagging and zipping around, and so that was great that I did get to see that. And I can't imagine what it could have been other than a craft that was under intelligent control, but it wasn't moving like an airplane. And this landowner that has the hunting cabin, he recently saw a strange craft, and he described it as looking like had a huge fuselage, and coming out from the sides of the fuselage quite a distance was like a chrome pipe that came out at a 45-degree angle and then came back and then tied back into the craft, and that was on each side. And it had a huge, huge tail that he described as canoe-shaped. And I don't think that he didn't describe much about the wings, but he did say there was contrails coming from it, and the whole thing, he said, was like it was painted orange. Because I was asking him, do you think it was reflecting the sun, or was it glowing, or what? And he said it must have been painted an orange color. And it just sounds bizarre, and he said that it was traveling straight up, and that it had lifted up just like it had been hovering above the ground a ways, and it was going straight up and climbed to several thousand feet and leveled off and continued on to the east. And he said it was that it really just kind of just zoomed off. And he used to be he had a pilot's license. I know that he was very comfortable in his estimates on the distance and the elevation. And I would have to go back through my notes and make sure I had all the numbers right, so I don't even want to go there. But he said it really zoomed off, and he just was puzzled. He couldn't imagine what it was.
Wow. All right, well, thank you very much, Farland Huff. We'll be right back after this quick commercial break with our next witness. You're listening to Beyond the Thresholds into Other Realms. Hey, I'm Anthony Kay with Beyond the Thresholds and Other Realms on ThresholdRadio.com. We're back. Sam's looking at me like he's got something to say. Go ahead, Sam.
Yeah, gentlemen, I received a call this morning from a good friend of mine by the name of Bill. And he and another friend of ours was saying something over the Sears Tower. And can you give us some idea on what you were seeing or how it all came about?
Yes, I got a call from Bob. He was outside taking a break, just coincidentally looking up. And he saw an object up the Sears Tower. It looked like it was standing still for a while and then maybe heading east a little bit. It appeared to him to be have a red glow to it, a red light. And so he called me. I came out to our rooftop, which is about 14 floors. And I started to look up, and I found it. And it was actually at the time heading north, maybe slightly east. And I saw something blue, and I definitely saw a red light that was just was gaining strength. It would get fairly bright, and then it would fade away to nothing, and it would repeat that.
Did anybody else see it around you, or were you the only person?
Well, I was all alone. I'm up on. No, I didn't have much time to act. I got the phone call, so I grabbed my camera and I took off to the rooftop. So no, I didn't have anybody else with me.
So the both of you were able to get an idea, triangulate, get an idea of the height. And from that, you were saying you felt it was relatively high in the sky compared to the air traffic. You felt it was higher than that. Was that correct?
Yeah, and it could be my angle. Bob kind of felt that it was somewhere in the same vicinity as the air flight. My angle, maybe the plane was closer, but this appeared higher to me.
Now, what was it that was so unusual?
Well, it was just unusual that it looked like some, you know, some type of sphere, and it looked to have a little blue on the sphere. It looked there was definitely something red that looked like another sphere, and it had something vertically hanging from it, which I couldn't really tell, but it appeared to have a light to it.
So there was something illuminating on that appendage or something like that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Now, as far as motion, size, what is it that triggered it as being unusual other than the object itself? What did it do?
Well, it didn't move anything like an airplane. It more or less was just moving very, very slow, and you can definitely see that it had some round shape to it. You know, it had definitely a sphere shape to it. You know, again, it was quite high, so it was kind of difficult, but I definitely, you know, I did see the a red light, and I did see blue.
Then the motion of it, you said there was some circular motion to it, or?
Well, I didn't see the circular. Bob, when he called me, he said it appeared that it was kind of circling in the area of the Cirrus Tower, kind of heading east then it started to head east. By the time I got up, I caught it past the Cirrus Tower heading, not that far past, but heading north of the Cirrus Tower.
So how long did it stay in the vicinity for? I mean, how long was it around for, do you think?
Well, I saw it for maybe 4 minutes or so, somewhere right around there, before it left my view site, you know, behind a building.
Compared to other air traffic going on above or below, how would you compare it?
Oh, the planes were looked like rocket ships compared to this thing.
Okay, so
the way it moved, you know, it was very, very slow.
Very slow. And when it took off, was there any variation in the speed as far as?
No. From what I saw, it just kind of maintained the same speed.
Okay. Now, you also took some pictures, correct?
I did, yeah.
And at looking at those pictures, were you able to discern anything as far as object, you know, as far as shape to the object or anything else? Were you able to get a better idea of what you were looking at?
Yeah, and when I looked at the pictures, it kind of backed up what I thought I saw. The picture shows two round objects. I mean, if you didn't know any better, you'd look at them and think it was a balloon. And the piece hanging, I kind of doubt I'd be able to see a string with my naked eye. You know, that's the part that kind of, you know, I start thinking maybe it's a weather balloon. But if it was just two average balloons, I don't think at this distance I would see the string.
Okay.
But in the picture, that appendage that was hanging is all blue.
And how far away from where Bob is versus where you are you as far as distance? Just approximately.
I would say we're just under a mile or a mile.
And you feel this was above normal air traffic or the air traffic that you were seeing?
I was thinking so, yes.
Okay. And as far as if you were to judge by that distance, size, because you're pretty good at that, what would you judge that to be as far as size? Bigger than or smaller than a plane?
Smaller than a plane, yeah.
Substantially, yeah. Would you say?
I'm sorry?
Substantially smaller?
Yes, I would say so.
Okay. What we'll do is we'll take a peek at this and analyze it some more. And
okay, have you seen the picture yourself?
Not yet. We just walked in, so the first thing I want to do was get your interview. And thank you very much, and you know, keep me abreast of this, and we'll analyze it and give you a call back. Okay, buddy?
Okay, sounds good. I'm trying to get another picture of a plane in the same vicinity.
Oh,
so
perfect.
So you have something to compare the pictures by.
Yeah, do you think that would be perfect?
Do you think somebody else had to see it? If it's right
I would
down
hope
loop,
somebody
you
else
know?
Would see it.
God, and I hope so. Yeah, people.
Chicago,
yeah, we'll call WGN and a few other places to see if we could.
And if anybody
see
listened,
if somebody
yeah.
did see that. The other thing is, you know. Maybe if they're closer, they had a better idea what they were looking at. Either way, it was unidentified. It was flying. Obviously an object. And, of course, one of our key witnesses from Tinley Park had his eyes to the sky. Actually, two of them. So the A-team was out there from Tinley Park. Good going, guys.
Yeah, thank you. That was
thank you so much.
This is like breaking news.
It is. It's like breaking news.
They ran inside the house so fast. They were like, we got to get this. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. It was like, oh, God. Yeah, that's cool. You know, it's in the middle of the loop. Somebody had to have seen that.
Yep.
So it's, wow.
We'll see. You know, like he says, he's very objective. Could be balloons. You know, the bottom line is whatever it is, it is.
And you know, I wonder how it took off. He said it just kind of – I was going to ask him that. He said it flew behind a building or
something.
Yeah,
supposedly there wasn't a variation in speed, so it could be something that, you know, could be as simple as a weather balloon or balloons, something far more illuminating or reflective being like a string or something. We don't know, but the bottom line is – we'll analyze it, take a peek at it, and if it stays unknown, it's unknown.
It's got to be something, because I think that's a no-fly zone over there, isn't it?
It is a no-fly zone.
So it's got to be something.
Yeah, we were talking about balloons, but it doesn't apply to balloons or UFOs.
Yeah.
Our next witness is Mike, who's up in Freeport. And back in, I think it was last year, early last year in January, we seen many reports coming in. Also, a strange event pertaining to a possible meteor coming in over that area.
Speaking of that, oh my God, you just remind me. Last night, I was outside on my deck having a cigarette, and I looked up to the sky. I mean, it was right before, I'd say it got dark out, right before John came over, and I saw something burn. I mean, I was looking up at the sky. I was like, that's a funny-looking light up there, you know? And then I found out it was an airplane. Well, what I thought was an airplane, but it just looked really high. So I thought, you know, blinking lights, it's probably just an airplane. A couple seconds after that, right above the street across from my place here, I saw a meteor or something just like an ash. It was falling from the sky, and it burnt out just before it hit the ground. It had to have been a meteor.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it was so interesting. I have never
seen
an
interesting. It's amazing how small something could be and illuminate so bright. It could be just the size of a grain of sand, and that baby could be seen from some distance.
Yeah, I
just don't get hit in the head with one.
Well, no, I wanted to go over there and look for it. I was like, I wonder what the hell that was.
Yeah.
It had to have been a meteor. I've never seen a meteor like that. I've seen them up in the sky shooting in stars and stuff. But
a lot of debris, too could come in. Of course, we get that now and then where space debris comes in and makes a very interesting fireworks display.
All right, when we come back after the break, we have Mike from Freeport. He's also a witness to the unexplained. He'll tell his story when we come back. That and more on Beyond the Thresholds and Other Realms on ThresholdRadio.com.
I want to know who you're meeting in the cemetery.
I don't have to tell you anything.
All right, I'm Anthony K. We're back with Beyond the Thresholds into Other Realms. And Sam's got a little surprise.
Yes,
what's going on,
we
Sam?
Had a surprise this morning of this sighting over Chicago. Whether it's anything in particular, we'll see when we analyze it. And, of course, we're being objective, as our witness also is, or both of them are. And speaking of witnesses, do you know last year we had a sighting out in, or was it last year? Was it last year? Well, anyways, we'll know exactly when it was. But we had a sighting over Freeport, Illinois, which is near Rockford, which we had those mass sightings on 13 nights, and I think we have Mike on the line now. What does it look like? Do we have Mike here?
Yeah, we got him.
Okay. Mike, how you doing?
Pretty good. How about you?
Pretty good. Now, when was that sighting in Freeport?
That was February 2009.
Okay, so it was last year, and assuming my years are right, and I didn't lose any. No, I have missing time now and then, but sometimes I do miss a year or two. But I think we're okay at this point. Now, in February, what was it in particular you were doing prior to this event?
Actually, I was just out back the house, just having a smoke, just kind of staring off in the sky. And wasn't really looking for anything, just kind of was there relaxing.
And what was it you seen, or what caught your eye?
Oh, man, it was just wild. First thing I seen, I mean, just out of nowhere, I seen this huge white light coming in over the horizon into town. It was just, as soon as I seen it, I could tell it was something that I'd, you know, never experienced, never seen anything like it. It was just pretty much unexplainable.
Now, what day was this?
That was February 10th.
And what day of the week? What day of the week was that?
I can't be for sure. I think it was a Tuesday, though.
Okay, and approximately what time of the day?
It was about 1 a.m. in the morning.
About 1 a.m. in the morning, you're out there having a smoke, and you're seeing in which direction this light coming from?
It was coming from the west.
Coming from the west, and you notice it as being very unusual. In which way? How was it odd?
It was just the brightness of it, and just, I mean, I've seen tons of things, you know, with, you know, I've seen planes, helicopters. This was nothing even close to anything you compare to anything like that. It was just, I don't know, just something you've never seen, just a huge, bright, white light, and it was so low and so, you know, coming in so low that it was just crazy to see.
What was your first reaction when you seen it?
As soon as I seen it, I knew it was something unbelievable, so I ran in the house and started looking for the camera.
Now, did you end up catching it on film?
Actually, I snapped photos of it off my camera.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, luckily we do have some great photos and very interesting detail of the photos. In addition to multiple witnesses on the second sighting. Now,
correct.
Was that second sighting? Oh, first of all, let's describe what it was as this object approached. What were you saying?
Okay.
Let's say it's getting closer and closer. And when is it, how far away? Well, it's difficult to tell how far away, but how soon after you just see it and you're able to get a photograph of it? Were you able to get the photograph of it first and then start to see some detail, or is it the other way around?
Pretty much both. I mean, when I came out the house, it was going by the side of my house, and it was about, I'd say, four stories above me, maybe a little bit more than that, not too much. But I could really make out the shape of it and everything. I just seen, you know, coming in, it was like a huge, white, bright light, just, you know, really big, and I could tell it was something very unusual. So when I got my camera inside the house, I came out, and it was approaching towards my house. I looked over to the south and was able to see it, and it just, I mean, I could really pick up the shape and everything. It was kind of like an oval shape, no wings, totally silent, flying at a speed that you'd think it was going too slow, that it would just fall out of the sky. So, I mean, it was just crazy. It was black in color. There were red, green, yellow lights in little circle forms on the side of it, and then on the back you could see like lights on that side too. I mean, I could pick up the whole shape, and you know, it just was unexplainable how this thing was flying and how it wasn't falling out of the sky.
And as far as size compared to an airplane, how would you compare it? So let's say to a commercial jet.
Okay, I would say a commercial jet, it was probably it would be smaller than that. But, I mean, this didn't have wings. It was just a mass form. So as far as, you know, what you're actually looking at as not being wings, it was actually pretty big. I'd say, if I had to say how big it was, I'd say maybe five cars, maybe, put together.
How long did the event last altogether?
After I seen him fly by, or after I seen it fly by the first time, after that, I took another photo. I actually took three photos that night, and there were two other crafts or two other things that were unexplainable too. So
now let's get to the other ones. What else was seen,
okay,
and how soon thereafter was it that night that you seen these other objects?
Well, it was simultaneously. I mean, I took the one photo, and then as I, you know, after it passed where I could, you know, see it at my house, I looked over to the east, and I seen what appeared as like a fireball in the sky. So I took a photo of that, and zooming in on that one really looks really wild. It was like a bean shape. One was a lot smaller. It had like an oval circle on the top of it that looked like some kind of, almost like a propeller inside of a circle. But there were no wings on that either. It had little red dots all the way around it, and it was gold in color. And then the other one that I took was, I don't know if it just wasn't as close or not, but it was just a fireball, I mean, in the sky. So I guess there were three different, you know, things that I seen that night.
This all happened on the same day?
Yep, all on the same night, probably within, I'd say all the photos were taken within probably like 15 minutes.
Did you feel that you had any missing time, or did time get screwed up for you, or did you realize that you thought you were out there for 5 minutes and really you were out there for an hour or something?
Yeah, you know, I think it might have seemed that way to me. It seemed like it was a shorter period of time as I took the photos. But then when I looked back, I was like, wow, you know, I was actually taking these over 15, 20 minutes, but I think it was just the complexity of what I'd seen, you know, and just trying to take it all in and trying to make sense of it all.
So, yeah, you were kind of in shock probably.
Now, this was not the only time you had an experience. You became pretty astute to things in the sky after seeing that and interested in and looking and... Obviously, after some point, you just realize, wow, there I may be able to see something else. So you're out there again. And how long was it after that you actually had another sighting of something?
I want to say it was probably 2 or 3 weeks after that was the next time I had a sighting.
And that was with some other people, weren't you, with somebody else?
I actually wasn't with somebody, but they seen them too. They seen the same thing. I called them because they live out in the country, and I knew it was going to be going by them probably, so they were aware of it and seen it in the sky as well.
So you've seen these objects first of all, and then you called your friend, whose name is Jason, correct? Or we call him
correct.
Jason. Now,
yep.
Again, how did this all take place?
I had seen something kind of coming in that was pretty much the same situation. It was silent, flying really low, slow, you know, to where you think it would come out of the sky. Those things were doing all kinds of wild things, though. I followed them for a while, actually into the country, and they were stopping on a dime, and then they would go, you know, at tremendous speeds, and they were just doing things that, you know, aren't like what any type of airplane could do.
Really
unusual things.
Were you able to get a good view of them?
Yeah, I was able to get a pretty good view, yep.
Now, did you get any pictures?
I could definitely tell that those... we did get some photos of those as well. And
wow. You know what?
I don't think we did that initial night. I don't think we got those the initial night. We got some of what we thought was the same thing after that, though.
Okay, because I didn't get a copy of that.
Did you get any license plates?
Yeah, John wants to know if there was any license plates. He wanted to know. But
any license plates.
We're always trying to figure out where they come from, you know? Like I always tell you.
Venus.
It's like we know that these things exist, and every instance could be different. You know, you get people that say that, no, these things just don't exist. Well, we know better. And where they come from, well, we can't really postulate because we don't know. I mean, we could come up with ideas. They could be from out of this world. They could be advanced engineering. They could be a combination of a lot of things. Who knows?
Other dimension, too.
Yes.
Definitely. Yep.
So has the activity stopped ever since then, or does this stuff still happen around there? Or has this been happening there a long time, or was it just that one day?
Recently, haven't seen much. Haven't seen anything recently. Not anything like those times. I mean, that was just, you know, until you see something like that, I guess you just, you know, you don't know what to think, but then it kind of changes your whole perspective on things. And
now,
I'm definitely always watching, so.
That second sighting, you really had a real good look, at least, of one of them, and you said there were two of them that night, correct?
Yeah.
And you went to the school... Wasn't it a school that you went to and you were looking at it? Or was it a church or a school?
Yeah, I seen them fly over the school. I seen one fly over the school, and there were actually two, and they separated as it came into town. One was driving, one was flying south of town. The other one was going kind of through the center of town. And those two crafts I seen out towards the airport, which our airport is a small airport, and it was closed. And I talked to the people there, and they said there's no way anything should have been there. And these crafts were actually at a standstill above the airport that night on the second sighting. So, I mean, that was pretty wild to see. And to, you know, obviously they weren't landing, and they weren't supposed to be landing. They were just, you know, stuck in the sky completely.
What's their interest in airports, Sam?
I don't know.
They sit there and laugh at our airplanes.
They probably laugh at our planes. Now, when you're looking at it, Mike, give me as much detail. First of all, what are you hearing?
Nothing. Hearing nothing at all.
Okay. Now, when you're looking at it, give me a description, first of all, of any detail. Any detail of shape or whatever.
The biggest thing that stood out to me was just the fact that these things had no wings whatsoever. It was just, you know, kind of like an oval shape. No type of wing off the back of it, no wings on the side. Really specific light forms, like in circles, kind of, I mean, on it. Other than that, I wasn't really able to pick up a lot of detail off the actual base of the craft, but I could pick up, you know, see everything around it and see that there wasn't anything, you know, that you would normally see on, like, a aircraft or anything.
Now, you're looking at the back view, the side view, and underneath. Can you give us, let's take one perspective at a time. Underneath, if you're underneath it, what are you seeing? If I were to look up, looking at it, what would I be seeing? Or what is it you see?
If you're underneath it, you're not seeing anything but black, and then there seemed to be like a white light in the front of it, where, like, if you took an arrowhead, the front of it not being at a point but being curved, that point right there underneath, there was like a white light. And when I say white, not like any type of yellow, like an actual white color. In the back, you know, not like an arrowhead, but instead of being like straight across, it actually kind of ovaled in a little bit.
So it's concave. Like
exactly. Like you could almost make a circle in the back of it. You know, you'd already have a start because it started to circle in. And at that point there, that appeared side of the craft, the way it was flying, which, it's hard to say if these things can fly they could probably fly any direction they wanted to with anything being in the front or the back, but on that specific side where it was concaved, it had lights in a row. You know, there were probably like 8 lights in a row, almost like some kind of reminder, you know, what they would call a propulsion system or something like that.
Now, that's looking directly at it, so we're not underneath, but inside that concaved area. Now, follow me on this. If you were to take a pumpkin seed, look at the pointier end of it, and hold it up, it's rounded but pointy. Then you hold it, and you were to, let's say, take your fingernail and take the back section out. Wouldn't it look similar to something like that? If you were to carve out concave that back section?
Yes, I'd say so.
Mm-hmm. Now, the lights on the sides are around the rim or the edge that you were also seeing. So you're seeing green, orange,
like around
green,
the edge. Yep.
Yes, yellow, and many of them.
I would say so. There are many, and I would say that the sides you could tell it was 90 degrees. You know what I mean? There wasn't any type of, you know, you could see that this was the end of the craft, and it was straight from up to down, straight across, and you could see the lights. So that's why it was so easy to see that there weren't any wings or anything.
How thick was it, would you say, compared to the body? I mean, if it were an inch long or 2 inches long, how thick do you think it was?
Compared to the length of the craft?
Yes.
I would say it was probably, you know, from one side to the craft to the other side, we'll just throw out a number like 10. And from the top to the bottom on the sides, I would say maybe 2.
Okay, so it was relatively thin.
Now,
the funny thing you mentioned is they can move at any angle. They're not moving aerodynamically.
Correct. They also flew, instead of flying like, they actually flew like on a tip, you know, like one side would be like the left side. was down, and the right side was up, so it was flying at an angle, but it was still flying straight.
And you've seen them move standing still and then moving rapidly from point A to point B?
Oh, yeah.
And stop on the dime, pretty much?
Oh, yeah. Yep, they were at a complete standstill over the airport.
Now, you watched them over the airport?
Yep.
How far away from, like, the road? I know the area. Were you at the road watching it over the airport, or were you at this location?
Yeah, I was at the road, and I would say at the most I was probably half a mile away.
And the name of that airport is?
Albertus Airport.
Now, you were proceeding, going east by southeast to Jason's location, and were you still seeing them at this point while you were talking to him on the phone?
Actually, by the time I had talked to him, I had one that I could still see in sight, and then that's why I think that he seen the other one, because I lost track of the other one, and then he had seen the same thing that I saw coming by his place. So it made sense to me that I'd lost that one, and that was the one that he was seeing, because I could still see the one that I was looking at, and that wasn't the same one. I could tell that by the direction that he told me he could see it from. So.
Okay. The one that he saw, do you recall where he seen it disappear at? It was an interesting location. Do you recall?
Where he seen it disappear at?
Yes.
I think that it was flying from almost like a southeast direction, and it kind of disappeared over the horizon.
Where was that near?
That was out on by Rink, out by Jay's house, out Highway 20. You went Highway 20 from Freeport to Rockford.
Now, where he was saying that it was near some location that it.
It was by the time he almost couldn't see it anymore. Before that, he seen it at a power plant.
Which one is that?
That's the Byron nuclear power plant.
And as I recall, he mentioned that at this point it became very illuminated. It lit up and then it just disappeared.
Correct. Yep.
That's cool. I wonder if it's recharging or something.
I don't know.
Yeah, but, I mean, these things were doing all kinds of.
Well, you always see them at nuclear plants, too.
Unconventional things that you just don't see all the time. That's for sure.
Well, here's something interesting. Wasn't there also a scenario of soon thereafter or in and around that time a blackout or some power issues?
Yeah, actually, after we had those sightings, the same night. We had a major power outage in Freeport, bigger than what you usually see. I think like probably at least half the town was out of power.
And where does that power come from?
That power, I believe, comes from, say, out around Pearl City, Illinois. I could be wrong on that, but I think it's somewhere west of Freeport for sure.
I'm wondering if it's from Byron.
Could be, too. That's kind of what I was thinking, but at the same time, I seen these crashes coming from the west, and I remember hearing the next day that there was an issue at a power source west of town, which was out here somewhere by Pearl City, I think. So
Pearl City
it
is
just kind of
That's what you told me originally. Pearl City, there was a problem out there too. Now,
it's hard to remember everything.
Did you have any disturbances as far as your? While this was going on with your cable or anything in particular, any disturbances?
Not that I remember.
Okay. You had the now. Beyond that, was there other sighting dates?
Other sighting dates that I can remember?
Yes.
I can't remember the actual dates, but I know that a lot of it seemed to be happening right around like Monday or Tuesdays a week for some reason.
Yes.
I don't know if that's just a coincidence or what. But.
No, you were mentioning that. And the other thing is when we cross-referenced that to other reports that we were getting in and each and every time you called with a report, we had other reports coming in. And many of them substantiated, what you were saying, similar or at least moving in the same direction and things being reported. So again,
I believe it. I'd be surprised if nobody else seen it. That's for sure.
Oh yeah, Mike, you've done a great job paying attention to what's going out there in Freeport. And guys, you have some questions for him?
No, I think he covered it pretty well, but that is kind of weird how all that happened in one day. And
oh, yeah. Well, he had numerous sightings. There were other events, and I think what we'll do is Mike and I will get together and probably recount some of these, see some of these other sightings. The other thing is, Mike will have you back on for a follow-up on the analysis. These gentlemen have never seen these pictures, so I'm going to show it to them, and then we'll have you back, and we'll go through them again. How's that?
That'd be great.
Great, sure. Mike. Thank you so much.
It's nice talking to you, Mike.
Yeah. Good interview.
Hey, thanks. Good talking to you guys, too.
Okay, take care.
Coming up next, we have Frank Fraschino, author of Shoot 'Em Down. He's going to talk to us about his book. That and much more on Beyond the Thresholds and New Other Realms on ThresholdRadio.com. Here's to just one more. Here's to all the damned. Here's to the bloodshed.
Beyond the Thresholds, into other realms on ThresholdRadio.com.
Okay, you're listening to Beyond the Thresholds, Into Other Realms, and Sam's got Frank Fraschino on the phone right now. Sam, what do you got going on?
Well, here we are back again, and this is Frank Fraschino, author of Shoot Them Down, The Flying Saucers Air Wars of 1952, also the Flatwood Monster, which is a very unique take on something that was mistook many years back. What year was that? Was that 52 also, Frank?
Yeah, that was also 52, Sam. That was right at the end of the summer. And what we basically have here, since we're going to talk about 52, we might as well start at the beginning, Sam.
Let's do that.
1952 was called the Year of the Saucer. It was actually a banner year for flying saucers and UFOs. And back in that era, Sam, the Project Blue Book staff was in charge of investigating and evaluating all the UFO reports in the United States and different locations around the world and their properties. And 1952 alone had a total amount of reported sightings was 1,501.
Wow.
Now, that was the most reports to intelligence than any other year in Blue Book, which actually was between 1951 and 1969, and that was at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Akron.
Now,
well, anyways, we have these 1,501 sightings, Sam. Huh. Now, by the time they mulled through it and the statistics were all done, we had 303 unknowns. Okay, but what's interesting about all of these sightings, Sam, is the high point was the summer of 1952. And this is where my research is focused on, and the Flatwoods Monster case is at the end of the summer. It kind of peaked with that big sighting there.
Now, we had something else happen in the summer of 52 that really caught the attention of the press, didn't we?
Say that again, Sam?
We had another scenario that took place in July of 52 that really took some interest.
That was towards the beginning of the summer. Well, let me give a recap of the statistics for that summer. Okay, during that three-month period, Sam, between June and September, we had 1,134 reports. Out of the 1,501, 1,134 happened during the summer.
Wow.
That's a big chunk. Okay, out of those 1,134 reports, Sam, 111 were unknowns. And that's quite a bit, the comparison between all of these statistics. And Captain Edward Ruppelt, he was the chief of Project Blue Book in this period. And he actually is quoted as saying that if you can pin down a date that the big flap started, would be about June 1st. Now, in Air Force terms, what a flap actually is, it's a condition or a situation or a state of being in a group of persons characterized by an advanced degree of confusion that has not quite reached panic proportions. So at the beginning of the summer, that June 1st time, it was starting to escalate, and the United States was starting to panic. As we got into July, it started going up a little bit more. There was actually, in June, there was 148 reports that went to Blue Book at Wright Path. It went up to 536 in July. That is when we have the famous back-to-back weekends over Washington, D.C., where the UFOs flew through the restricted zones.
Now,
over
on the Capitol. Just on that sighting alone, wasn't it the largest or press conference in a non-wartime scenario?
Yes. Yeah, the press conference was held at the Pentagon, mm-hmm. and it was actually the largest press conference since World War II, post-World War II. And that was actually on the 29th of that month.
And this is a funny thing, you know, we hear time and time again, no one takes this serious, it was never taken serious, blah, blah, blah. It was taken dead serious during that period of time, and we had fighters that were sent up to intercept during that period of time. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about that.
Okay, let me go back to give a little history of what was going on with the fighter jets at that time, Sam, that most people aren't aware of.
Yes,
okay,
please.
Back in 1952 and this early part of the summer, the Air Force and Navy actually had rocket-bearing jets. And now these three fighter jets were all carrying what were called these 2.75-inch Mighty Mouse rockets. They were about 4 feet long, weighed about 19 pounds. Now, these things had an effective range of about 3.5 miles, and they traveled about 2,500 feet per second. The Air Force's F-86D Sabre Dog had 24 of these rockets, and they were in the lower belly of the jet. And what happened is they would lower down on an elevator, and they were fired out from the into the forward position from underneath the jet, and then this elevator, this carriage, would go back up in the belly. We also had the Air Force's F-94C Starfire, and that was introduced in July of 52, and that had 24 rockets, and they were housed in four groups of six rockets behind retractable doors behind the nose of the jet, right up in the front. There was a little black dome in the front, and these rockets were situated around it. Now, what's interesting is a lot of people don't realize that that F-94C had 1,200 pounds of electronic gear, and the computer on board of this jet was coupled with the radar. So it would actually lock onto the targets and pick the precise moment to fire at the target. So it was a little bit more advanced than what most people realize. They were working on this stuff going back into World War II. Then the United States Navy had the F-7U-3 Cutlass, and it looked like a big bat, kind of like a miniature stealth. I don't know if you've ever seen one, Sam.
Yes, they're really
pretty
impressive.
Streamlined plane. It didn't look anything like the Air Force's jets. And it actually had this fitting belly pod, and it carried 32.
Wow.
And they would put this pod on here, and they would fire out from, you know, this the under portion belly. And it also was carrying the 420 cannons. And so we had some good jets back in that day, and this is what we were sending up to go after the flying saucers. Now, that leads us into what else was going on during that period. It was revealed by the Air Force on July 29th. A few of the newspapers carried these articles that jet pilots are and have been under orders to investigate unidentified objects and to shoot them down if they can't talk them down. That was actually revealed on July 28th. And so we got a lot of stuff that was going on in that era. And Project Blue Book is loaded with different stories of these UFOs being chased by our fighter jets, not just over the United States, but throughout the world. So we were going after them, Sam.
And we were firing on them.
Yes, we were firing on them. There's actually records going back into the late 40s that Donald Kehoe talks about in some of his early books about fighters firing at UFOs over the United States.
Now, do you feel we ever took any of them down in any of those instances?
Well, that brings us into the next area where I studied, Sam. I started looking through post-World War II up into the late 50s of accidents that were going on across the United States and throughout the world during the era. And in my book, I write a chapter called The Six Deadly Years. And there was an overwhelming, staggering amount of jet fighters that were mysteriously crashing and vanishing into thin air, Sam, over the United States.
On one date, I was really shocked when I seen it was September, was it the 12th, where there was 16 instances in one date. What year was that? Was that 52 where there were 16 instances?
Well, of where there were sightings?
No, where there were plane issues, either shot down, Air Force issues with hardware.
Well, what we have is what I discovered with the Flatwoods case is that on September 12th, was the same day that the Flatwoods Monster incident occurred. Nobody had looked around the outside edges of September 12th. Everybody just looked at the Flatwoods case, and a lot of people were laughing at it. Well, what I did, Sam, is I looked all around that case, and I spent years working on it. And to make a long story short, I eventually ended up pinpointing 102 locations that had occurred over the United States, and these were locations where UFOs were sighted about a 21-hour period. And on my website, flatwoodsmonster.com, if you look on the blog section of current information, you can actually see the map where it has all the documented sightings. And a lot, it's kind of funny, Sam, a lot of people think that those were the sightings that occurred over the year of 52. That's all what happened in one day.
That was September the 12th, 1952.
Yes, right. And what's interesting about that is there was a good chunk of those sightings, Sam, that were documented in Project Blue Book. And I ended up working with pilots, astronomers, scientists, jet mechanics, air traffic control people, retired cops, anybody and everybody who would be willing to work with me who was familiar with that era and what was going on. And we were able to put together this map and figure out what actually happened that night. And there were several damaged UFOs that flew in over the eastern seaboard, and one that came up from the Florida area that headed north into West Virginia. The other three came over the eastern seaboard and split and went in different directions, and they were all targeting main strategic military installations. It was kind of a scary night, and this was kind of what came to a head that particular night, September 12th, and there were sightings over 11 different states.
So would you say this was a crescendo due to the fact that we had a standing order to shoot them down, that something did take place?
Absolutely, Sam. These these UFOs came in damaged with pieces off of them. I tracked every mile that these things were seen going over the United States. It took me years to do that, Sam. And if you look at the map, you can see the different the structures and the flight paths and the trajectories of what I was able to put together.
Oh, it's an impressive map, very impressive. And you've spent 17 years on this, as I recall, correct?
Yes, yeah. And I'm still looking, and I'm still finding more witnesses who are coming forward, Sam, even as of this weekend in particular.
Oh, wow.
So do you think there's a hidden war going on right now behind our eyes, between another world and this world, Do you think that we're at war with another world right now? We don't even know it.
Well, right now, I'm not so sure about. I know back then we were. In 1952, we were. The sightings were overwhelming. And you know, it's funny, Sam, is what was reported to Project Blue Book is only a fraction of what was going on. There were sightings going on by the dozens every day all over the world. The majority of them were over the United States. And what's interesting is the majority of them were seen over military installations and nuclear facilities.
Yeah, on that note, we know for a fact now that much of the very good cases that may be classified as a national security risk were diverted from Blue Book. And that could be a mountain of cases. We really don't know. The other thing with your research, on that day and during that period of time, which you're building up to into your next bit of research, how many planes of ours went down during that period in 52 on very unusual circumstances?
From what I went into the New York Times, Sam, okay? I researched with Stanton, and we studied several cases. But the only disadvantage of this is manpower, because it takes approximately a year to go through 60 to 100 pages and try and decipher and pull out the lies and the crap of what is going on with these Air Force cover-up stories. What I did is I actually went through the New York Times, and the six deadly years that I discovered were between 51 and 56. And once again, this is only a fraction, Sam, of what was going on in that era. And I found out that there was 205 fighter aircraft incidents where aircraft were actually destroyed. And 188 of them were over America.
Wow.
Destroyed over the United States. And that's including seven trainers. Okay, there was actually 181 non-trainer fighters destroyed over America. And all of these incidents, there was 200 fighter pilots and radar observers killed. And these deaths and accidents aren't mid-air collisions, Sam, between fighters and non-fighters. These are planes that went down under mysterious circumstances. And what I found interesting is out of these 205 accidents, 26 fighter planes vanished, and 19 vanished over the United States.
Amazing.
Just vanished into thin air. We have guys who broke speed records traveling from New York to Los Angeles. You know, these are world-class fighter aces and pilots who had fought in World War II. And Korea, coming back stateside and taking off on a, quote, routine training mission and vanished into thin air within minutes after they disappeared. We have 19 such stories like that over the United States. And there were 35 American pilots that vanished.
What is your
six-year period? Mm-hmm. 42 Air Force, Marine, and Navy men worldwide in those few years.
And they're... And how are they recorded as far as their deaths?
Just vanished.
Vanished.
Yeah, vanished, disappeared. That's the end of it. No follow-up stories. They were just never reported on. And what's interesting, Sam, is the New York Times reported these stories at the beginning. You would see these big, gigantic headlines. As I started going on from the early 50s to the mid-60s to like 56, 57... These articles would not be big, gigantic headlines anymore. They would be one or two line little articles, and they would be stuck in the back of the ads of the New York Times with the bra and underwear ads and gimbals towards the end of the newspaper. They weren't big, gigantic headlines anymore.
That's just messed up. We're going to take a quick break, and when we return, we're going to talk with Frank Frischino some more about his Flatwoods Monster. You're listening to Beyond the Thresholds, Into Other Realms on ThresholdsRadio.com.